Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. It's Wednesday, but it's still Monday Evening's Property Rant with Edwin Almeida. Hi, Edwin. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine, Martin, but I lost two chickens last night.
You lost two chickens? Oh, that's careless. What happened?
No, well, I didn't, not literally, it was a fox. The bloody fox outfoxed me. He was waiting for months for me to put the chickens in the temporary coop because the fox outfoxed me. That's all I can say, Martin. And he got in last night and took out two chickens. But it's like, I guess in a way, a fox is always a fox, right? And in a way, a politician will always be a fox and a skunk as well. And they're going to be.
Politicians don't change their spots to mix metaphors dramatically.
And no matter what we try to do, I was trying to be as careful as I could. But yesterday I was a little bit lazy and I didn't secure them properly. But then again, it was a tenacious little bastard. It dug through the chicken wire that I buried. It probably dug about almost a meter, and came under. I tried to drag one of the chickens with it and couldn't. And obviously then the other chicken started making a racket, and I went out, and it was too late. Yeah, unfortunately. But then again, the same thing happens to us, right, with the politicians. We try to do all sorts of things, and then they just wait and wait and wait. It's like they just went away. But then again, Martin, it's one of the only had a wage rise in the last 3 years. Everybody else has been on a fixed income for the last 10 years, except politicians the council workers, I think. But it's just one of those things.
Yeah, it is. And interestingly, John Adams and I made a show yesterday on my other channel, the Interest of the People channel, talking specifically about the upcoming inquiry around COVID and Dan Andrews and those sorts of things. And in fact, that video got took down for an hour, but it popped back up again now. So it's interesting, but you're right about politicians. They do seem to line their own nests extremely well. And of course, statistically speaking, they have a higher proportion of investment properties. So they've got more interest in properties than your normal Australian. And I have this theory that a lot of politicians are more interested in, lining their own pockets and also, of course, getting re-elected. And so they're very keen on announceables, saying they're going to do things like the housing policy, which was a great announceable, but was completely meaningless. And then, of course, we have the jobs report this week, which is another announceable, but completely meaningless. Politicians seem to be very good at saying a lot and doing almost nothing.
Doing very little, but I saw that post that John put up on Twitter with regards to or on X with regards to YouTube. I don't think it was YouTube, Martin, that pulled it down. It said it went down for an hour. I'm just wondering. I mean, the reason why we're doing a Wednesday night podcast is because it wasn't my potential root canal that's carrying on that would give me a lot of grief. I think it's got to do more with your switches and your cabling. I just want to know if you fixed that up, Mark.
Well, yeah. Well, you can spread that nasty rumor about my cables. Just to be clear, this is not my cables, right? My cables are actually very nicely under control. Thank you, Edwin. But I know that you couldn't make it on Monday, but it was quite funny having a bit of a jive about switching cables. I do have a lot of cables. I will make a show on that down the track, but at least we got to Wednesday. Of course, the dilemma now, Edwin, is it a Monday Evening Property Ramp on Wednesday? That's the question.
Look, it's a bit of a mixed bag at the moment. And look, I think it was worthwhile waiting. We've got all sorts of property news and affairs and misinformation, disinformation, shenanigans, all sorts of crazy stuff happening out there. One of the other posts that I read today, apart from the crazy post that with regards to the YouTube pulling down your video, yours and John's video down. I mean, there's a judge that I want to bring this judge over to Australia and deal with the underquoting issues. I mean, there's a judge that's given wants to put Trump, all politics aside, but wants to put Trump in prison for overquoting. So the judge reckons that his Mar-a-Lago is only really worth $18 million or something. But like I said, all politics aside, I mean, this is an interesting point here. So I want this judge to come over to Sydney and get a position in fair trading and start dealing with underquoting as well, and start putting some of the agents away and those vendors that underquote. I think it sounds like a cool judge to me.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, this whole question of overquoting, underquoting, and what is how much are things worth? But it does certainly sound as though one judge at least believes that some of those property values in the Trump estate were actually somewhat overvalued, which meant that, of course, he was able to get cheaper funding for some of his loans and things. But interesting times. I agree. We could do with a few of those inquisitions locally, because some of the values that people are spruiking are, well, a bit crazy, really. And, the underquoting is still, well, it's rampant in Australia, isn't it?
Oh, look, it is. It's and we talked about it. We said that 2023 was going to be. Those underquoting levels were going to go a lot higher. You see in all sincerity, there's really no need for it. But we know one of the main reasons why they do it is agents do it is that that a crowd can turn up to a house outside of creating the emotion. And everything. The other main pillar, or the other main purpose for real estate agents to do that, is to have the crowds, is really to try and impress the neighbors as to, look at us, look at what we can do, look at the crowds that we can draw. And if you want to sell your property, sell through us because we can draw this crowd. So it doesn't help anybody. Really, in one way, it doesn't help the vendors, because whilst we have a Mexican standoff like we are having and we've been experiencing out on the field, is some of the values are not, or the strategy of underquoting does not promote higher values that the agents have given the vendors because of this Mexican standoff. As I say, look, there's case in point. I took one of our clients to the first auction on Saturday. They participated in auction, and in this auction one of the areas of Sydney where I documented that the agent was quoting 1.2. The local agent had given the owner, or another local agent had given the owner a valuation, or a CMA, comparative market analysis, of 1.45. The agent, he chose to go with the agent that, look, that nobody, you would have to have rocks in your head if you believe that the agent that he chose, well, yeah, sincerely believed that the property was only worth 1.2 when another local agent gives him a CMA of 1.45. So there was no doubt in our minds that the expectations were around about the 1.45 to 1.5. But what happened, Martin, is, as I was saying, is because we took advantage of that position that the agent took, and we just slowed things down. At the end of the day, we were prepared to walk away with the property at the reasonable price, but he went beyond our reasonable expectations. And there were two others that obviously wanted a lot more than what our clients wanted it. But the main thing was the agent was really shitty with me in particular. I took the auctioneer to task, and I took the price guy to task, and I believe that in all sincerity, the property was undersold to the expectations of the vendor. But this is and look, and this is from the one of the local agents that knows the buyer. Because it's a local, an individual from the suburb, and they know the buyer. And the buyer said they had another $30,000 in their pocket to throw at the property should the bidding kept on going. So that's what happens. See, you don't maximize the sale, the potential value of the property when you play these silly games. And mainly right now is because people are starting to ask questions. Why are we paying so much? And this is the Mexican standoff. You've got high expectations on the one hand by the vendors. You've got and the buyers are not as keen. They're still out there, but they're not throwing money left, right, and center. Another case in point is we actually were participating in the purchase of a property out west, and we didn't get it. Our clients didn't buy it. It wasn't by auction. It was by private treaty. We got gazumped on an offer that we made by about $30,000. And however, we felt that although our buyers had the potential to go again and our bid make a higher offer, we chose to sit it out. And lo and behold, that sale fell over. It was under a cooling off, and it fell over. And guess what, Martin? We our clients, and we were able to buy the property for $30,000 less than what it got sold for on the first case, because the purchaser wasn't able to fund it. Now, whether it was an issue with his funding or whether it was an issue with the valuation, we don't really know. But the case in point is. This is where the banks are going to be very cautious. They're going to throw a lot of caution to the wind with the valuations, and they're going to throw a lot of caution to the wind with as to who they give depending on the LVR that the people are borrowing, who they give these high mortgages to, because they know that there's a lot of emotion out there. Albeit with future, we're going to discuss what KPMG have put out recently today. But albeit with that on hand, people, a lot of the local people, local first-time buyers or local buyers, are really maxed out. That's outside of the WeChat chatters. That's outside of the overseas money that's coming with the high immigration. But you just got to be careful when you go out there. There's a lot of stuff, shenanigans going on. How do you like this? With talking about shenanigans and all the things going on about there in the big world of real estate, our friend Purple Pingers created a website, shitrentals.org.com, and he's covering a lot of grief from agents, and he's really taking a stick to the Victorian real estate community, I must say.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's basically a one-side, two-side discussion, right? So if, the real estate agents are asked to do something, they'll maybe do it at some point. But when they actually ask you to do something, they sort of turn the wick up and say, you've got to do it straight away, or very unequal balance between the two.
Look, this is the, to me, I'm following for the interest of what people are posting. And what he shares about the post, and looking at what people post there and share on his on the website. If you recall, about 3 years ago, we were looking into this ourselves, into putting things up in that arena of rentals. But obviously, for reasons, for legal reasons, because I hold a license and our company hold corporation license, I can't get away with the shit that this guy's getting away with. Kudos to him. He feels he's doing the right thing. But what my takeaway from all this, Martin, is. This is what happens with these fickle policies that the state governments are throwing at the rental issues and the rental markets. And one of the things that I haven't commented on as yet on his post is all this stuff that is shown on the website, all the stuff that he's sharing on X is basically the failure of the minimum standards that Victoria are already under and Queensland are under and we're looking at walking into. So there's no fix. What this shows me is the huge disparity between fickle policy and reality.
Spot on. And you know, what I'm concerned about is that there really doesn't seem to be much intention amongst some of the state entities to really tackle any of this stuff, right? It's still going on. And I guess partly because the real estate agency and surrounding you know, industries are actually very strong in terms of their advocacy and their lobbying. But also, of course, most states want stamp duty, so they want transactions at any price. So they're not necessarily going to clamp down on stuff that you would think and I would think should be being clamped down on. So it just shows you that you need to be very careful if you're actually, you know, an individual buyer or an individual renter, because you can get caught up in this stuff without really meaning to be.
Look, 100%, Martin, and this is something that, it goes back to 20 years, whether you're a renter, whether you're a first-time buyer. You really got to do a lot of background research on whatever you propose to do, whether to enter into a lease agreement, to enter into a purchase, cross your T's and dot your I's very well. But look, the shenanigans will play out, as you said. There's too much vested interest. The so-called watchdogs, whether it be VCAD or NCAD or Fair Trade in New South Wales or Victoria or Queensland, whatever. At the moment, they're underfunded, under-resourced, and there's not a lot they can do. And the fines that they're dishing out is because they themselves don't understand the regulations based on what George from our friend George from ITC keeps on putting out, and he alleges that the regulators themselves don't understand the legislation that they put out, and don't understand the guidelines, don't understand the policies that they put out. So their inspectors are very reluctant to look for finding the agencies and agents and the perpetrators of the, whether it be underquoting or whether it be leasing properties that are unfit for rental and so forth. Giving them the maximum penalty, which is something that will then deter a lot of these agencies from participating in these shenanigans. But they won't, because they're a little bit scared and ignorant themselves to an extent. But look, these policies will keep on being thrown out, and these band-aid solutions will keep on being thrown out without much thought, because that's what governments do and that's what foxes do, try to outfox us and the general public into really getting what we put them in power to be able to obtain. And that is just longevity of a peaceful lifestyle. But with so many vested interests, Martin, it's any wonder. And talking about vested interests, I mean, I think Pete put out a tweet this morning and saying that Dan's gone. That's it. I think they're having a celebration as of 5 o'clock this afternoon down in Victoria, in front of Parliament House, about Dan's resignation. So there are a lot of questions that we'll talk about later on in the show with regards to this as well. But there's a lot been going on. I mean it's only Wednesday, and it's a full week of shenanigans and whatnot, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the successor, which I think has been announced now, will probably continue some of the policies that Dan was chasing down. But, you know, if you think about some of the things they did, apart from blowing up the debt, as you can see here from this chart, I mean, it's a massive amount of debt that's going to have to be paid up in due course, or not, as the case may be. But, you know, things like the Airbnb, things like knocking down the high-rise towers to replace them with new high-rise towers. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that are going on. And you got to say, well, hang on a moment. What's problem are we really trying to solve? Or are we, as you say, just doing a few tactical things around the edge to try and look as though we're doing things? But really, the chances of solving the underlying housing issues, be it in Victoria or anywhere else, are pretty, it's pretty unlikely. It's not going to be enough to be able to move the dial. And in the meantime, of course, people end up paying more than they should. You know, the debt to income ratios are still going adverse. And, you know, politicians don't want to take the hard decisions, do they?
Oh, look, no, it's, I mean, that's not why you become a politician. That's not why you choose that profession. If you know, that's not the reason, right? Look, all this is playing into the hands of what we've been saying, into into the hands of those that have got, and they'll end up with a lot more, and those that haven't, are obviously end up with a lot less, and your more stressed areas are through the roof, and rental stress and everything else that which we'll talk about as well is just absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, we're not looking, or our leaders are not looking at the real issues, are not looking at the issues at grassroots levels, because they don't live there. They live in the ivory towers. And until they do come down to terra firma and experience the real life, where it's going to be, same old, same old. The question is would it have been different under the Libs? I don't think so. I think it would have been the same.
Well, that's true, and it's interesting. I don't know whether you saw, there was a report that came out today, looking at the wealth distribution in Australia, and in round numbers, the top 20% of people in Australia have an average wealth of more than $3 million. The bottom 20% have an average wealth of $36,000. And they're arguing that, in fact, over the last few years, there's been a massive distortion. So effectively, the top few percent are getting much, much more wealthy, but a lot of other people are not experiencing it at all. And of course, within that top 20%, there's a smaller proportion that are actually, much more wealthy than that. So we've got this peculiar situation where some people are doing really, really well in Australia even now. And their wealth is still improving, property prices wobbling up, equity prices still looking relatively strong. Whereas there's a lot of other people who are really struggling. And none of the policies that I'm seeing from any of the federal or state entities are really trying to, deal with this. So they seem happy to let this massive diversity of outcome continue. And of course, most politicians are in that top 20%, so why would they?
Yeah, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of that, the top 20%, or the people that would be put into the category of the top 20%, is would have a wealth of over $3 million. A lot of it would have to do with wealth on paper, in terms of asset value of the land, because that's just gone through the roof in many parts of Sydney, in many parts of other capital cities as well. But I would be interested to see how many of those are also struggling, because it could be asset rich and cash poor, right?
Yeah,
So.
no, you took the words out of my mouth. So, you can look at the wealth on paper, and of course that's significant superannuation balances, significant property balances, and of course significant equity holdings. But it's not necessarily the same as being able to handle the cash flows. And so in my mortgage stress analysis, I'm seeing more and more people in these more affluent areas. So in other words, people who have significant assets not being able to pay the bills. So it's not all about asset value, it's also about cash flow. And of course, cash flow is king at the moment, and the inflation numbers that came out, the monthly ones, showed inflation went a little higher. So it showed that the costs of food down a little, but energy up dramatically, oil prices up dramatically, and even the cost of building dropped slightly but are still extended. So the truth is that there are many people being caught up in this really weird situation. But I have to say that most of the property portals and what have you, they don't seem to understand what's going on. They talk about property and values and those things are there. That was something in splendid isolation from the real world.
Yeah, look, and this is where I guess a lot of the witch hunt chatterers discuss a lot about, from what Dusty tells me, is the fact that the people that are involved in these witch hunt groups and the witch hunt chatterers, is they've got access to that world, because of the because of the professional status, because of the income streams that they already have, because of the partnerships they have in terms of the partners they are, they're both high, you know, professionals, white collar professionals, in high ranking in a lot of the cases, and you've also got this amalgamation of the first and second generation of assets, which enables them to go out and buy more and build on that wealth. There are people that that are obviously sitting on, you know, 1, 2, 3 million, 4 million, $5 million estates, but are on baked beans and toast. And for one reason or another, it's hard to move, or it's hard to relocate. And these are the people that the government's forgotten about, and the powers to be forgotten about. That it's, yeah, there are a lot of issues around the rental stress and the people looking for rental accommodation. But you've got a lot of elderly, single parents, whatever the case may be, that just can't refinance. They can't draw down, as we say, asset rich, cash poor. And unfortunately, you can't eat the grass that grows in your backyard. I mean, you sort of can if you really wanted to, but you can't eat the bricks and the mortar, regardless of what part of Sydney that your estate is on. And the upkeep is very costly. But this is where the WeChat charterers are really taking advantage of, Martin. And this is what we've been saying for a while. And the WeChat charterers have been telling us since mid last year, where they were preparing for the first wave of buying, and now they're into the second wave of buying. And the local charterers with the current position that. Or the article that I referred to before is they're saying that the local charters are saying basically what KPMG saying, the property prices are going to rise, and they're out there and hunting. That's the local charterers. They're out there hunting and forcing. We will see a lot more of the local charterers in areas where we may not have seen them before, participating in bidding wars, and there are areas that don't that don't have a lot of auctions. But when I say bidding wars, it'll be basically Dutch auctions or closed door auctions. They'll be looking for where they can park the money, where they can see growth, where they can convert. Because you and I have been talking about for a while is that their philosophy or their MO of buying is a lot different to the reasons why locals are buying, or first time buyers are buying, or local investors are buying. And that's a lot to do with budget accommodation, a lot to do with just simply parking the money. They could care less whether the rental yield is 2.5% or 2.8% gross before you even take out management fees and the like, because they're looking at capital growth, and this is the green light that they've been given, and this is going to be an interesting event moving forward, given the fact that the numbers are still very low in comparison to last year, and I've seen a little bit of a retraction, which is similar to what was happening last year, in spring of last year, where we got the numbers were creeping up because of the trend or the historical trend of the spring season being the season that you sell for the traditional sellers, but then midway through and towards the end of spring, the numbers were starting to dwindle. Because of all the noise and the misinformation, disinformation, news here, news there, it's all over the place. You really have to scrutinize what you're reading, how you're reading, and at the end of the day, it comes back to what the agents are telling the vendors as well, and what their families are telling the vendors. And for various reasons, people are deciding to hold off, and that's why we're not really seeing the numbers as yet. So obviously it's early days to tell, to see whether we're going to follow that trend of last year. But so far, over the last week and a half, the numbers aren't piling on as much as what we were expecting.
Yeah, very interesting, Edwin. And just continuing the discussion about WeChat chats for a second, it's worth thinking about what's happening up in China as well, right? There was an article that came out this week saying that Chinese investors are scrambling to sell overseas properties amid shaky economic conditions. That's you know, an interesting observation. The question is, are we seeing it here locally? I guess there have been some moves perhaps to make it more difficult to shift money out of the country or whatever. But, you know, how real is this, do you think, Edwin?
But from what Dusty's been getting from the WeChat chatterers over in China, this article is really not what is happening. And you've got to understand, the political and philosophical position that they take, right? So at the moment, currently, they're under the Agricultural Bank of China. Basically said, look, we're not going to give you more than 5,000 UN withdrawal limits. That's it. That anything more than that, you've got to seek special permission. I think that's on a weekly basis. So it's really so what they're really saying. The local chatter in China, what they're saying is, you know, in mainland China, is the people there, the chatterers are saying, look, you'd be silly to sell your assets overseas to bring it back to China to only have it basically somewhat confiscated or controlled, or your access to, you're not going to have access to that money as quickly as some would think. So, yeah. What Dusty's saying to us is, from her understanding of what's happening there, is it's the opposite. If anything, the local chatter, the chatterers there in China, amongst themselves, they're saying you're a fool if you sell your assets. So what this article purports to be happening? Look, it's really this information from what Dusty's telling us. And it's a little bit of propaganda, and if people are going to be getting excited about foreign investors selling their assets here, I think that there's a big hurdle to climb. They're really they're not really keen on the government. If anything, the Rang Zhuo is still very strong there. Yeah, run away from China as when you can, if you can, wherever you can. That's very strong. So they're not keen on taking the money. They're not keen on taking the money back. What we are seeing, and what some of our followers are being sending me by the DM on X and on email, is people offloading, WeChat chatterers are offloading apartments, which what we spoke about a few weeks back anyway, that was what the investment groups were telling them. Sell those dud investments that are in areas where you can't get budget accommodation. It's too hard. The strata corporations are too strong, or the owners corporations are too strong. The strata companies are too in your face to allow budget accommodation for you to participate in certain strata blocks. So sell those, because you're not going to get more than your average rental for that area. Sell those, they call them dud investments. And even if you have to sell what you bought, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, doesn't matter, because convert that money that you've stunk in there and it's doing nothing. Put it into a freestanding home anywhere else in Sydney, where you could realise a budget accommodation scenario, or you'll know that within a year or two it's going to go up in value. Hence the reason why they're really this KPMG article that was put out today is the green light for the second wave that you and I've been sharing on our shows.
Yeah, and just to underscore again, you know, Aussie house price is set to soar 15%, says KPMG. Now, there are a bunch of assumptions there that they're making about where interest rates are going to go, and migration is fueling demand, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, the other point here is that's an average number, and I have a feeling that things won't be the same in, all of the geographies. So let's not get too carried away. But it's interesting. I was talking to Chris Bates yesterday on my live show, and he's of the view that in certain areas of Sydney, they're going to see significant price rises over the next year or two. Of course, he's on the mortgage broker side, so you may be expecting him to say that. Certainly, bearing in mind that listings are not looking as though they're going to continue to rise, that's a significant change in the weather, right? And if, in fact, we see more listings evaporating effectively, so the total available property pool continuing to shrink, and that's partly possibly because people are less willing to move, so they're going to stay put for a bit, and I see that in my surveys, it will mean that for the good properties that are coming on and will get snapped up very quickly, you've still got, of course, the dogs that have been around for some time and still aren't shifting. So I think a high-level headline of 15% couldn't be very misleading.
Oh, look, it is, Martin. You're not, they're the averages. They talk averages and they paint everything with the same brush, right? I mean, we said earlier in the day, we were talking about it last year. We were saying that if the numbers remained low in a lot of parts of Sydney, we were going to see this phenomenon where we were going to reach, if not supersede the highs of 21 and 22 for a lot of the suburbs. And this is what we are seeing. There are some suburbs that aren't moving. In actual fact, there are some suburbs in the Blacktown LGA that have retracted a little bit. Yeah. But that comes back to the number of properties on market and why you've got to pay very close attention what people are selling and who's selling and why are they selling. Once you start looking deeper into that, you see a lot of it's what we've been discussing in the show for a long time, where we've been saying that the dogs are going to go out first. The rental properties that can't be converted into budget accommodation or any other form of get that extra income, or there's literally a ceiling in that particular area or neighborhood. There are some neighborhoods that you've got ceilings that you're not going to get more than that, and that rental return isn't meeting the repayments. And if the investors are highly leveraged, well, yeah, you're going to see a lot more of those on the market. So, look, hence the reason why I've hung my hat since 2020, somewhat. Don't look at the factors and the movements as much as what it used to before 2020, with historical factors, because things change on a dime. We talk about the CCP and the China changing their policies on a dime, and I mean, and we've seen it firsthand here in Australia as well, with from the federal to the state to local governments, where they change policies, and they're changing policies everywhere. On the one hand, you've got the state governments, the federal government, and the state government calling for more housing, more affordable housing, more this, more that. And then on the other hand, you've got the local council, such as Parramatta Council, putting the hammer on, dropping the hammer on dual occupancy and dual occupancy development, which is turning basically a single block into a duplex on Torrens Title, and that sort of put a dampener on a lot of development. I mean, it's you could just sort of wonder, who's driving those. The local governments. Why the changes? Why there's such a dichotomy? There's such the mandates are so diverse, or the policies are so diverse, or the wishes are so diverse from federal to state to local governments, and people. Just people don't know, and developers don't know, and values are going down, or values are stagnating. But this is, we go back to those fundamental principles is, study your local area, study the area that you want to go into, study it very, very carefully, very closely, look at the trends, And don't be too eager to jump in with the emotion. You know, make sure you make a logical decision, not an emotional decision where you're going to be a transaction. If it's a private treaty transaction, you're only dropping or losing 0.25% of the value of the property, which is, you know, a few thousand dollars, you know, in most cases. But if it's under auction campaign or under what a lot of agents are forcing people to do is, you know, in order for you to have first dibs at the property is, yeah, they're asking for a 66W certificate in New South Wales, which basically means you forego your cooling off rights and you're dropping in at 10%. You know, if the valuation comes in, that's 10% of your average $1.4 million property in Sydney. That's $140,000 that you could potentially, watch go down the gurgler. Very quickly, or you're going to have to beg, borrow, and steal the difference between the valuation and your borrowing capacity. Because a lot of people still think and believe, Martin, that banks are still willing to throw money at it at you, even if you get all emotional. These are the times where regardless of what KPMG says, regardless of what the full, regardless of what these institutions say, and regardless of what the mainstream media say, the banking institutions are very careful because they're looking at more than just averages on a mainstream article. They're looking at your serviceability. They're looking at your trends in terms of working trends or job trends, which industry is dropping in terms of the wage structures or the contracts and so forth. So unless you've got a super secure job, they're going to go with you. And unless you've got a very high deposit, you could say they'll go with you on overpaying by 5 or 10%. But if you don't, if you're just coming in with a 10% or a 15% deposit, and you've overstretched your limit because you got all emotional, because you got caught in that undercurrent at the auction, and you went above your means, well, you better beg, borrow, and steal the difference because valuations are very tight.
Yeah, and just quickly, two observations. The first is we're getting more reports of people selling quite recently purchased properties that they purchased in the last 1 to 2 years. And in some cases, they're clearly taking a loss to do it, but they feel they need to. In my surveys, when I'm seeing that, people feel that they actually bought the wrong property at the wrong price point and are now feeling that the only solution is to get out. So that's one observation. The other one, just going back to Dan and Victoria, you wonder whether in fact this could change the story in Victoria, because of course we saw quite a lot of people moving away from Victoria over the last couple of years, picked up to Queensland and elsewhere. So I wonder whether the change of leadership would be sufficiently different to attract more people back into Victoria. And so could we see a differential move in Victorian prices because of the supply-demand disequilibrium there that might be created? I don't know, but it's an interesting question to consider.
Oh, look, it is, and that's something that you and I were talking about earlier on, which is something that's really, it's one of those things. I mean, you got to ask the question, how many people left? But the other thing there, Martin, is with, if let's say you're running a business, right? I mean, is the leader or the government, are they going to be, is it going to be favorable for you to own a business there? Because you got a $220 billion deficit. Yeah. So somebody's got to pay for the bloody thing, right? So it's definitely not the politicians. It's going to be the business owners and the business operators. So you got to ask yourself the question, are you going to go down there, and what businesses are going to expand? Look, I'd say it's going to be steady as she goes for the next 3 months until the Victorians get an idea, or the rest of the population get an idea as to how the state's going to be run. I mean, the Victorians could have got off cheap. If the next premier decides to run another $220 billion deficit. So, I mean, who knows, right? Who knows? The rain's going to be tied up, or the stallion's going to be let loose. So who knows? I think it's going to be steady as she goes. But yeah, I think the sentiment's there, and people are showing a bit of enthusiasm. But look, what Dusty does tell me, and this is Dusty, this is hot off the press, Dusty does tell me that Dan's going to be the front man. Remember how Dan went over to China? She's of the impression, she's of the understanding and the belief that Dan the man's going to be the new face of affordable housing by bringing in the container loads of the demountables or portable housing as a sorry gesture to the Victorians and what he did in Victoria. That's what Dusty tells me. I'm just putting it out there. That's not me. That's Dusty.
Well, that's certainly interesting, and certainly there's some interesting discussions going on around alternative building techniques to try and solve the problem, which may or may not. We'll see. Let's just quick look at the numbers, Edwin. So we'll start with New South Wales and in the Sydney region. So on the 25th of September, we had 16,798, and if we go forward, go backward to the 18th, if we go back to the 18th, 16,924. So it doesn't look as though that's particularly positive. And in fact, the latest on Wednesday, the 27th, 16,828. So my take out from that, I don't know what you think, Edwin, is that we are not seeing the continued rise of new listings.
No, and this is what I'm saying. This is this is very similar to the trend of 2022, where we were getting excited about the numbers creeping up, but then because it was the same again. It's the conflicting stories. People don't know, and I guess now you adding more to the conflicting stories is the rental side. Right, the high demand and the low numbers in the rental ledger across Sydney, which is it's getting really really scary. So that is something extra that you brought out last night in the podcast. There was the fact that people are also now thinking, hold on, shit, if I sell my investment, I'm up for a hefty capital gains tax, right? So, and these bastards, the fox will get you, no matter how they'll get you, even before they give you the last blessing, as they're putting you underground. the taxman's going to come by, that fox and that skunk's going to take it out. So that's something else that people are thinking a lot of, and I'm sure that's coming out also in your surveys, because those tax bills and the deficits that the state governments are running are very high. So if you're not getting a lot of sales transactions, you're not getting the stamp duty, which is shared amongst the states by the federal government, well, then what else is there, Martin? So if you're sharing your investment properties, it's your capital gains tax, right? Because they've got to get it. So the transactions aren't there. They're not there. They're pumping. They're trying to pump off the plan sales and that, but the builders aren't playing at the moment. They're not playing. I don't think the builders are going to move this year. I think if there's going to be a bit of movement with builders doing something positive, it's going to be more towards the first quarter of next year. And don't be surprised if they get the builders get a leg up to start a lot of the projects, because right now it's the average cost of a two bedroom apartment, and the average cost of a building, a high rise of an apartment, and you average it across the two bedrooms, because you've got three bedroom mix and you've also got your single one bedroom apartments, the average cost, we're still up around the 520, when 2019 we were at 380. So it's still very high. So and then add to that the land, add to that your taxes, add to that your stamp duties, add to that your levies, add to that your council contributions, add to that your professionals, and add to that another 5% buffers for stuff ups in the construction. I mean, it all adds up, and builders just say, no way, Jose. So unless the governments and the state governments give them a leg up, they're not going to move. And I can see that happening in the first quarter of next year, because one way or another, by hook or by crook, the governments have got to deliver these the so-called 1.2 million homes across 5 years. They've got to start sometime, and they've got to be shown to be putting a shovel to the ground sometime in the near future. But I can't see it happening until the first quarter of next year.
No, I think that's right. And of course, we've said before, don't let a bucket of money and a premier get in the same room, because they love each other, right? So, you know, any chance of getting any money for doing housing stuff, they'll jump over hurdles and whatever. But I still don't think it's going to move the dial particularly. Let's just look at the Melbourne numbers as well. So this is at the 11th of September. We were at 23,954. Jump forward to the 18th of September, 24,275. And in fact, on Wednesday the 27th, 24,595. So again, it's the same old story, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we are getting a positive movement in more so in Victoria, but we'll see. We'll see what happens over the next couple of months with the new premier, and we'll see what happens with those numbers. If there's a state migration back into Victoria, because people are going to feel psychologically or mentally, they're going to feel a little bit more relieved to be under somebody else, as opposed to Dan. So yeah, we'll see. We'll wait and see. Like I said, it's just the follow the numbers. Yeah, watching the numbers, because the numbers still don't lie. As they say, the auction numbers aren't as crash hot, because you've got your you've got the final in Melbourne and the grand final, and you've also got the school holidays. So the numbers don't look too rosy by underquoting. So we'll see. And typically, this is, to me, in a lot of these cases, when the numbers are very low, at the end of that, people are still wanting to buy, and there's less competition on the less numbers on the ground, so which means that there's a lot more competition or more buyers potentially wanting to buy. So it'll be an interesting weekend. But those numbers appear very low for those reasons: school holidays and the footy.
Absolutely. And just looking quickly at the rentals, 27th of September, 8628 in the Sydney region.
We started at the beginning of last year. We started with over 9,000. Over 9,000. If you recall, we've just been watching these numbers dwindle. This is we started over just a little bit over 10,000 numbers on market. Yeah. Then we said, I wonder how long it's going to be before we breach the 9,000 barrier. And here we are. And they're not growing. Wednesday and Thursday is when most of the listings drop on the portals. So I'll see what happens tomorrow with a lot of these numbers. But there's not a lot of activity. It's getting scary, Martin. It is absolutely getting scary.
Yeah, numbers are continuing to fall, aren't they? Yeah, it's not good.
It's like a little balloon.
And in fact, you've also put some national numbers up, which is quite interesting. So if we look at the national numbers, this is properties to rent nationally, 41,500. That's on the 18th. And on the 27th, 39,160. That's a Wednesday. Now, if you think about the level of migration that we're seeing coming in at the moment, right? I think the migration numbers at 550,000 or 600,000 people coming in now, of course, that's not as individuals rather than families. So, but I don't know how you square those numbers, but it doesn't look flash at all, even nationally.
No, and if you look at that, Martin, it's almost, I'm no mathematician, right? But it's almost a 7% drop.
Yeah.
Off the bat, and again, the Wednesday and Thursday is when we get most of the new listings come on, and nationally we're starting to feel that more so nationally as well, which is again it is really scary. I mean, we're talking about 8,628 was sort of figures that we saw back in the day in when I was contracting Raymond Horne at Blacktown. We were watching those, that was the amount of numbers on the rental numbers on market market in the Blacktown LGA. Yeah. We're talking 8,000, just over 8,000 in all of Sydney. There's 36 or so, 34 or 36 LGAs in Sydney. You know, 627 or so suburbs across Sydney, and this is what we've got. Hence the reason why people are going to be very, very hesitant to sell. Incidentally, one of my tradespeople rang me up today and said, "Oh, I need help! I need help! I need help!" You know, he's been renting a house in Tilopia for over 7 years, and I've been telling him, "Listen, man, you got to fix your leases for another 2-3 years if you're not planning on buying just yet. You got to start fixing that lease." Yeah, that was 3 months ago. So he rang me up this morning, Martin, and guess what? The landlord's given him an eviction notice because the landlord's now got a DA on that parcel of land, and somebody's offered him $3.2 million, and he's got two months to basically to vacate. He's got four kids, three of which are still in high school, in the local high school, and one of them's working. They all live at home. Look, it's not so much that he's that he won't have the money to pay for something else. At the moment, he was living the dream because he was only paying $750 a week. Now, you can whistle Dixie if you're going to get in that area. He's telling me that his wife's already started looking for a duplex, you know, in the area that they're looking. Yeah, they're around $1,000 a week. Not that that's a problem. The problem is the fact that, you know, we've got a four boys, and you know, of which the wife drives, he drives, he's got his van, the two of the sons drive, so they've got five cars altogether, plus all the painting equipment and all the spare can, everything that they've got to cart around. Well, this is one of those things. I told you so. You should have locked in whilst he was umming and ahhing about selling the block of land as with a DA. He could have at least bought himself another 12 months. He could have had a bit more time to look, but they didn't listen, Martin. And unfortunately, a lot of people are in the same boat. So you either pay a hell of a lot more or be prepared to move a lot further out when you got special needs like he has.
Yes, and it's interesting, again, in my surveys, I'm seeing quite a few people who are in rental accommodation. Kids are at a particular school in a particular area, so they're completely restricted as to what they can find. And so it's really, really tough to try and figure out what to do. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a story I'm getting quite often. Well, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, we should just talk tip of the week. And this is another auction-related tip, and it's very important as well.
Look, it is always just keeping that same thread of giving the people the tips for buying at auction. And this week's tip is, look, if you're going to be buying at auction, sometimes the end result is not necessarily to buy the property. Obviously, be prepared to buy the property if you get it at the right price that you believe is the reasonable price that you believe price on the day outside of emotion, right? But once you get there and once you read the room, like I was sharing about earlier on about the our clients that lost their auction virginity last Saturday. I said to them at the end, look, once we read the room, once we found out who was there, who was going to buy, who was prepared to buy, and who we got a fairly quick idea that we weren't going to be in the game. And yeah, there's no point in fueling the auction. And the strategy could be by, you know, just simply slowing it down to keep the values down, not push it any higher. And there are a number of ways you can do that. You know, in slowing down the auctions, engage the auctioneers. One of them, as I keep on saying over and again, don't think that just because they hold the gavel that they've got everybody else has got to shut up apart from raising their hands when you ask for $50,000 or $25,000. You know, lower your increments to the point that you want to go in there to slow things down. Ask questions about the house, and if the auctioneer keeps on badgering you to contribute, make factual statements. You know, start make factual statements. You know, if he says, "Look, you know, are you prepared to come in with an extra 25?" And they look at you, and you're looking back, and that, just say, "Look, yeah, I'll give you the 25. I'll give you the extra 25, but before you take the bid, I want assurance that from you or the real estate agent that the bathrooms aren't going to leak, because my building and pest report said that the bathrooms were leaking, whereas yours doesn't, and doesn't say anything about moisture in the penetrating the bathroom walls, but mine does. So if you can give me a guarantee that they're not going to leak, I'll give you the 25." See, it's a factual statement. You're not being silly, but you're being factual, right? So, and sometimes, like, you know, my famous one I always keep in the back of my head was one over at Taramara Way, when I said, "Yeah, I'll give you the extra 50,000 if you get rid of the highway noise in the background." So,
Very good. Well, I think that's important. So the concept of slowing it down and engaging is pretty important. And I am shocked sometimes when I've attended auctions to see people just piling in and getting sucked into it and making incremental bids that are way bigger than they need to be, just to sort of show that they're still interested. So the other point I'd make, Edwin, is, you know, a bit of a extra $1,000 or $5,000 is perfectly legit. You don't have to go 50 or 100,000, right?
Yeah, 100%. And this is what we were doing. We were having fun. We knew we weren't going to get the property, but lower everybody else's expectations and start asking those questions and start engaging and start sort of educating the rest of the rest of your competition that things don't have to go the way the auctioneer or the agent wants them to go. At the end of the day, you've got the money. You're the money that's going to be owing the mortgage, right? Not the auctioneer or the selling agent. So, he was asking for 50,000 increments, and then I went in with 25. Yeah. Then he was asking for another 25. Looking at me, and then I said, "Yeah, I'll give you five." And then he goes, "No, we want 25. And then I said, "Well, it was a banter. It was really to get people to think that banter is to just dilute or dispel a lot of the emotion that some auctions run, and you can tell. He didn't take ours. Then obviously, there's various things that you got to do on the day. But the strategy at the end of the day is sometimes you got to realize that, hey, you're not in the game, you're not in this game. But try your darndest to lower the expectations, because what's the point of inflating, regardless of the fact that you can afford the property or not? What's the point of chasing somebody else that's always going to outbid you? And as I said earlier in the show, finding out from another local agent that knows that local family, they had another 30,000. Obviously, we peeled off 75,000 earlier than the last two bidders. They had an extra 30,000. In other words, they were already 105,000 above what we felt was a reasonable price for the property on the day. So there's no point in fueling that, is there? If it's only going to make the next one more expensive.
Spot on. Well, Edwin, I appreciate your time today. It's the Monday rant on a Wednesday. And my thought is this: we might do next week's on Wednesday too, because, of course, there's a holiday on Monday in many states, and there won't be many days. So if you're up for it, why don't we do another Monday rant on a Wednesday next week too, and then get back to our normal Monday the week after?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
All right, excellent. That's fine. Right, so folks, remember that next Monday's rant is also going to come out on Wednesday, and then we'll get back to our normal plan. Thanks, Edwin. Have a great week, or the remainder of the week, and a good weekend. And I look forward to catching up with you soon.
All the best, man.
See ya. Take care.